You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the psychology of dating with psychiatrist Mark Whaley and psychologist Michael Abruzzese. Our toll-free number, 866-999-4626. We'd love to hear your experience if you've tried one of the dating services or your story. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org.
I think I want to go back and mention one thing about Martha Stewart. Even if nothing really worked out well for her, I think the fact that she showed tremendous courage by going on, because she posted a picture, everyone knows who Martha Stewart is, and I think a lot of perhaps women, and maybe men too, but women might have been on the fence, might have been feeling very nervous about, so Mark talked about self-disclosure and anxiety about that. I think she may have encouraged a lot of people to take the plunge, and it would be really interesting if there's any way to find out how many of the people she encouraged to go online found someone and it's worked out very well for them, even if it hasn't, you know, worked out perfectly for Martha Stewart. So I think I think she really encouraged a lot of people. That was a good role model, I think.
Yeah. It can be kind of scary dating, you know, middle age or older. You know, it's like you've been in a relationship, perhaps, you know, your spouse has died or you've divorced or, you know, and things have changed so much since, you know, we were younger and dating. I can see it would be, I don't know, I think I'd have a bit of anxiety.
Oh, anybody would. And the other thing to factor in, you're not just dating the person or learning, you know, getting introduced to the person. Everybody comes with a package in middle age and later age. They come with families and kids a lot of times. And all of that is a part of the date, if you will. And part of the person. And there certainly are many relationships, as I say, for instance, that don't work out because not because the couple is so incompatible, but because other members of the package aren't on board.
Yeah. So
that's another source of anxiety.
Kathy's giving us a call from Brewster. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi.
I met someone through Match.com about 5 years ago, and I found it to be a really safe and fun way to meet someone that you don't ordinarily meet in your travels or your path. And it was just perfect for me.
Oh, so it was a good experience for you.
Yes, it was, because at the time I was new to the Cape and in my late 50s and working a job that was, you know, about 10 hours a day and weekends, and it really didn't allow me to have a social life. So I found it to be very safe and very interesting. I met probably 3 or 4 very interesting men before I met the one. And I enjoyed their company. I enjoyed hearing about their family and their lives. And I found it was very safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sparks weren't there with the others, but when I met this gentleman, it was perfect.
Yeah. Well,
could you say what you mean by very safe? What were your concerns about safety?
Well, I think, you know, as a single woman in this day and age, you have to be careful about who you're meeting and where you're meeting them and giving out too much information. So, you know, meeting for a cup of coffee or a dinner or, you know, walk on the beach, they don't know where you're living. So I think, you know, it's, in that regard, it's very safe.
Mm-hmm. Did you communicate via email before you met the person very much?
No. I found the most successful way is to, yes, communicate through email, but only 2, maybe 3 times, and then meet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't do too much emailing. It's just not a good idea.
Yeah, that's true, because emails can be so misinterpreted. You know, the tone, you know, you take a tone when there might not be a tone, or phone conversations, you know.
Right.
You don't pick up the phone that much anymore. Yeah.
So, you know, 2, maybe 3 emails, then a phone conversation, and then meet the person.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, Kathy, very, very successful.
Kathy, I don't know how this works with these services. So you go in, you fill out a form, somebody else fills out their forms. And so did you have, were there... you know, men who came to you, and then were there other men that you go to? How does that work? I mean, do they give, like, your information to a group of men, and then they contact you? Is that how that works?
Well, with Match, I know there some of them are different, but with Match, you know, you get an email each day with people who have shown interest in your profile.
Ah, I gotcha.
So you can sort of weed through. You know, I was looking for someone local, but I mean, you get people who email you from, you know, hundreds of miles away, and I'm like,
that's
really?
Not going to work.
This is not going to work.
Yeah. I just wondered about the rejection aspect of it, because, you know, some people go, oh, you know, is anybody going to pick me? But you don't, you're not really rejecting them face to face.
No, you're not. And if someone actually, you know, sends you a detailed email, then you, you know, you say, you know, well, you live, you know, this is not this.
Yeah, I think you're saying you live too far away. Kathy, you're starting to break up. Thanks, Kathy, for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. It's kind of reminding me, you know, of course, back when we were dating, it was like it's like the blind date thing. You know, you had a friend who'd fix it. And how many blind dates were? I mean, it seems like these online services work out a lot better than the blind dating.
Well, yeah, but the kind of online dating service, they're kind of blind dates.
Yeah, aren't they, in a way?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, one thing just to pick up about the anxiety of rejection, you want to get into the frame of mind that, say, the first date, the purpose of the first date is merely to see if there's going to be a second.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all there is to it. So many people, I've talked with a number of people that did get hurt by not getting called back for the second date because – again, as Mike was saying, their expectations were too high, or they're putting too much into how they're accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves.
Exactly.
Like because someone doesn't call you back or make a connection. You know, the name Match.com is really good because the hallmark of any kind of companionable relationship is that it's a good match.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a good match. It has to be a good match between employer and employee, between business colleagues, you know, between companions, irrespective of whether they're same sex or not. It's all about having the good match. So if someone decides, well, I don't think this is a good match for me, it doesn't mean it's about the other person.
Right.
It just means that one of the people is feeling insecure about their ability to sustain the match.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not individual to the person who's not called back. It has a lot to do with the person who didn't make the call.
And the match, when you say good match, what makes for a match is what happens when the people encounter and the interaction between the two. And that's one of the weaknesses of the online dating, obviously, because each person is presenting their side of certain characteristics, personality traits, interests, whatever, that get matched mathematically by the computers. That doesn't really predict whether there's going to be a successful, enduring relationship.
Like I say, if there's a spark, as Kathy was saying.
A spark.
Is there. Because, I mean, how much I think, you know, when you're in your 20s and maybe this guy seemed perfect, you know, in every way, but it's just not there.
Right.
Yeah, so that spark is something you can't predict.
Well, and also can't measure. I don't know of anything that is indicative of a measure on what a spark is.
How many couples you go, what does he see in her or she see in him? I mean, it's a hard thing. Yes, you say hard thing to measure.
Well, we had spoken on one of our programs before about social perception and how people make an initial, the primary sort, within about 3 seconds of social interactions with meet some of the party. And so that goes into what now they have these things called speed dating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure there are any online services that do speed dating, but there are some speed dating groups, I guess, on Cape Cod, or I guess you can just organize your own group if you work in a business. So it would be interesting to see the research on the success rate of meeting compatible people during speed dating versus a long-term program like a Match.com or Matchmaker.
You want to explain what speed dating is just for
Speed dating is a case where they take advantage of, I think it's 30 seconds or a minute, they have a bunch of men and women who are invited to either a conference room or a restaurant, and there are some administrators who organize the whole thing, and they invite 8 or 10 males and females, and everyone, either the male or the female, sits behind the table, and the opposite sex will rotate every 30 or 60 seconds and just give a little snapshot of what's going on and a little taste of what the relationship might be like. And it really does focus your attention quite efficiently, because, well, if you don't, if you're too scattered, that communicates something too. So you really want to focus your attention. And I think we have some research on how that works out, male versus female, right?
Yeah, that was fascinating.
I love this. I forgot who had done the study, but it was talking about, you know, how women and men react differently to this when the women are seated and the men circulate versus when the men are seated and the women circulate. Mark, you want to tell us about it?
Sure. Well, assumption has been, and it fits with our cultural expectations, but also fits with Darwin, that men are less discriminating and less choosy in their mates, whereas women are more choosy. So this setup, this speed dating setup, they did it two ways. The first way, the a woman sat, and they had some kind of measurement of how choosy each person was, how picky they were, more or less. The first one, the woman sat, and when they analyzed the numbers, it turned out, as predicted, that men were less choosy than women. Women tended to be more picky and discriminating. When they reversed it, however, and they had the men sit and the woman rotate, that difference disappeared. Mm-hmm. The act of sitting down and receiving the comer tended to increase the discrimination and the effort that went into discrimination. So there's more to it than the Darwinian biology of that has to do with the plentifulness.
Right. It's not gender related. It's more social, environmentally related.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So let's talk a little about Charles Darwin's theory, just so we know what we're talking about.
Well, the Darwinian theory, which has many supporters and evidence for its support, and is not going to be dislodged in our lifetime, certainly, and I would predict ever. But it predicts that, and actually Darwin wrote about it in the 19th century. He said, because men compete for mates and food, natural selection has encouraged men's, as he put it, more inventive genius, while nurturing woman's greater tenderness. So that was his 19th century way of saying that men are more promiscuous, less choosy, are okay with casual sex, and have more sexual partners in general than women, because it's biologically determined. There's much more sperm produced than there are ova, so that women have a fixed amount of biological tissue available, so they're going to be more discriminatory about what sperm gets there.
Mm-hmm. Whereas men, there are exceptions to every rule,
of course. whereas men want to spread, their interest is in getting mates and spreading it, so that it's against their interest to mate with a promiscuous woman because they're not sure whether they really are the father of the child that comes about, and whether they should then invest in raising that child, for instance. So there's biological wiring, if you will, in terms of natural selection and species propagation.
But as it would seem from this study, though, that can be manipulated.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's probably reasonable to point out that the Darwin evolutionary theory in terms of social considerations, really stretching it, really, really stretching it. And I would have to disagree with all the social psychological research that's done based on what they call social Darwinism. It's very, very limited, because the thing that social Darwinism cannot take into place is into consideration is the role of our frontal lobes and our cognitive considerations. So we talk ourselves into or out of anything. Mm-hmm. There are certain biological imperatives, but we can curb those biological imperatives, and we curb them by the thoughts we have in our head that can get us into trouble, like when we get addicted to bad habits, or it could bail us out, having us become more cautious and being wary and thinking through any flight or fight mechanism or impulse that we might have. So I'm not in the camp of the social Darwinism theories. And I know that there was a very famous writer, Stephen Jay Gould, who's passed away. He was a magnificent writer on evolutionary theories and evolutionary psychology. But he always seemed to have, in my opinion, he always seemed to have a little bit of a contemptuous eye for any kind of clinical issues. And the clinical issues is really where the money is, because that's where that's where people are. You know, so if you want to follow the money, you got to follow people's behavior, and that's not in theory, that's an actual behavior.
I would love to hear from somebody if they've done the speed dating. I'd love to hear what that's like. 866-999-4626. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have a caller who suggests that when you create your profile, we're going back to the online services now, to work with a friend or sister and maybe a glass of wine. Make it fun. I love that. That's a great tip.
Wait, is that for men as well as women or just
for women?
I think
it's for both.
Oh, you think so?
All right. So there are, of course, people who are not going to go online to dating services and probably not going to go to the speed dating things. They would like to prefer to do it the old-fashioned way. So what kind of advice would you get? You know, you join a club with like-minded, you know, people. You're looking for somebody with the same kind of hobbies. What? Where do people? Well, how do people do that?
I think it's reasonable to consider some old-fashioned matchmaking, if any of those old-fashioned matchmakers are still around.
Like your friends.
Well, no, I mean people who are professional matchmakers,
okay.
So people who really know people and get a sense because they've seen hundreds and hundreds of people and what kind of things work in relationships. So if there are any of the old-fashioned matchmakers around, that might be a consideration if they're legitimate, not if they're charlatans. And otherwise, you're really talking about putting yourself into a social pool where you have a chance of meeting a lot of people. So if you go online, you can screen hundreds of people in a matter of an hour or something like that. So similarly, back in the old days, you had dances or you had teas, social events, and sometimes you had like Sadie Hawkins Day where the girls asked the guys to dance instead of vice versa. So there are a number of what they call meetups, and I don't know if there's something called meetup.com, but if you go online and look up meetups, you'll find a number of meetups in the all across the country, and they are geared to certain kind of groups. Do you like serious films? Do you like Woody Allen films? Do you like archaeology? There'll be certain meetups that people have similar kind of interests, and that is a way that you can meet people of similar kind of interest, and you can review them on the internet too. And if nothing romantic comes out of it, you have the chance of meeting a lot of wonderful companions that you can share interests, Thai cooking or going to the theater in Boston or taking a trip to the Newport Mansions. And so I'd recommend any kind of affiliative kind of group like that, and you're probably going to have to go off Cape. There's slim pickings on the Cape. You know, it's really unisolated.
My thought was, I'm thinking there's a lot of, widowed women on the Cape, and as you're saying, not a lot of men in that particular age group. There may be some, and you know, some of these women don't have computers, or you know, don't really, you know, aren't. That's uncomfortable for them to. I have a lot of women come to me and say, "I don't even have a computer. How do I do this?" And you know, it's getting harder and harder, as we know. I mean, almost everything now you apply for jobs online. There's, I mean, everything is online. But I'm thinking, you know, they maybe meet people through their church groups or they belong to different clubs. And so I was just thinking of that group.
A church group is really good. A lot of people don't go to church anymore, but in an older generation, they still do. So any kind of organization where you can meet people. Many times it's you meet people by going to charity functions. We have a million charities and nonprofits on the Cape. That's a way to meet people. But again, you're probably going to have to go off Cape to widen the pool of people that you meet because, especially if you're on one of the islands over here, it's a very small pool of people and you probably have already met them.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely if you haven't had a match yet with one of them that you're going to get one. So you really have to broaden your outreach, and that means going to different areas where like-minded people might affiliate.
And I would suggest that you ask your friends and your relatives about anybody, their coworkers, anybody they know that might be interesting to meet. Yeah. One of the problems or the hesitancy sometimes is if you do that, then the first date is a three-party date, you know, because it's the two individuals. Right. And then what do they think about the introducer matching them, you know? but get beyond that. And it's just another way of meeting someone, and after all, somebody who knows you knows them. They have a feel. They might have a sense of a spark inside them that might be useful.
I've always found the best, like, kind of matchmaking when you're not a blind date, because it seems so much pressure there. But when you have a get together with, like, if I have a couple of friends in my mind who I think would be good, I don't even tell them. I just invite them to the same dinner party or the same get together, you know, a group of people doing something. And then if it's meant to be, they'll hit it off.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's not that pressure of, oh my God, I've got to see if this works out. Yeah. We're talking about the psychology of dating. Our toll-free number, if you have a story to share with us or a question, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a break.